So good evening, everybody. We are going to be studying a little bit about Noah tonight. So I hope everybody is very familiar with the story. So we're going to start off by trying to frame the story and see what are the relevant parts to a story, and see how we would rank them. So for my first question is for the floor is. Assuming that you have read, that you've read or gotten your impressions of Noah, so how would you rank him? If whoever wants to chime in, feel free, or you just type in the chat. How would you rank Noah on a scale of, a vote level, Spiesen, or Tzaddik, or, a nice guy? Which group do you put him in? It looks like we're all pretty confused, which is fine. So I'll just go through. I'll go through the basic parts of the story, and then we'll see where we want to. Okay, the Orly wrote nice guy. Okay, so there is. I'm going to start. We're pretty harsh about Noah. Okay, got a nice guy and an okay person. Nobody thinks he's worthy of being a Spiesen. We should invite. Nor is he one of the other. Okay. So here goes. I'm going to be sharing my screen now, so we'll hopefully all be able to have a little bit better understanding of what's going on. Let me try and get the figure. Sorry about that. Let me make it a little bit just a little be a little bit clearer for everybody. Sorry. Yeah, let's get the PDF version instead. It's normally easier for me to read, right? Okay. PDF it is. Okay. Okay. Where'd it go? Nope. Okay. Basically, so let's start with Noah. What's the first thing we know about Noah? So the first thing we hear about him is his being born. Right? That's the first thing we hear is Noah being born. So that seemingly should be enough for us to know everything. About him, potentially. Okay, so what do I say? Why do I say that can teach us a lot about him? Because when he's born, he's given a name with a special purpose, even. Right. So he's given the purpose of. Here we go. I'm going to skip down to the bottom where I highlighted the part that he's skipping through everything. Sorry. Excuse me, the part where. I scrolled way too fast there. So sorry about that. Okay, so what he's given the name Noah, and why is he called Noah? Because Zayin Achamenu Maaseinu Mitzvoyu Deinu Umin Adama Asher Hashem. Right, so he's given very, a whole introduction. He's being welcomed to the world with a big mission. So the question is, do we think of him fulfills his mission or not? What do we think? Noah fulfilled the mission that his parents set out for him of fixing God and having cursed this cursed land. So here we go. So I've got a kind of from Orly. The kind of. What do you mean by kind of? So do we mean you're welcome to unmute yourselves? You want? I don't think I've muted. How do I unmute everyone? I got a yes from Shira. Everybody can unmute themselves if they'd like.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm having some trouble hearing on and off.
Okay. Good to know. So, current question is: did Noah fulfill his mission of fixing the cursed world that his parents gave him?
Thank you.
So I think like it depends on what you mean by fix. I think like if you're very utilitarian about it, then he kind of did because the world was wiped out and he started in like a more, depending on how you read the rest of Tanakh, but a more like moderate, better population. But in terms of like actually fixing the people around him, not really.
Right. So he didn't really solve people around in part. That much he definitely did not He did not fix that issue. So, right. So as far as why I think that he might not have done the greatest job is because notice the words here. Notice highlighted in light green. Right. Who will, you know, comfort us or fix that from our curse? So to that end, Chazal say that he invented the plow. So he did help them in terms of, you know, dealing with a cursed earth. Right? So the problem with that is that what we see a few seconds later, when God is deciding to destroy the earth and bring the flood, what does he say? He says, Vayinachem Hashem, ki asat adam ba'aret, vayidatzev alibo. And he says, "Emcha et Adam, Asher barat me al pnei Adama, me Adam ad heima ad ramesh ad ofa shemayim ki chamdi ki asiti." Noach matzachem b'nei Hashem. So we see that basically. So Noach, look, the same language we have with his parents hope for him. The exact same words are used to show that actually, they're all gonna die. So maybe he wasn't as successful. So that's one thing we have to bear in mind. So that's one story. It's what his parents wanted him to do. Did he fulfill that? Seemingly not. But then the other question is what else was he granted to do? What else would God ask him to do? That's an easy one. God asked Noah to. He asked Noah to build a teva and gather the animals. Right? So that task. Did Noah do that pretty well?
Yes.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he got all the animals. You know, did spot on job. Oh, that party did well. And so that would imply that, you know, he's doing great. And, you know, he gets all that. But is that really doing great by doing that?
Right, because he's doing this for, in theory, not necessarily out of righteousness, but out of self-preservation.
Right, because what didn't he do? Right?
Ask about anybody else.
Yeah,
he didn't ask about anybody else. So to that, there's actually a machloket in the Midrashim, if he did. So we can look at that. Let's scroll on up. There we go. Did Noah ask anybody else? So here, that's here in Bereishit Rabbah Lamed Pasuk Zayin. So this is where there's an added story of Noah spending 120 years planting trees, harvesting them, and building the ark. And the whole time they're asking, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "You should repent, or we're all gonna die." And everybody's like, "Nah." Bishop's Tzadeh, so we'll be good. And, you know, Bishop dies a week before the flood, and then they all die. So that Midrash says that Noach at least tried. But Midrash is noticeably not in the Pesukim. So, right, so again, so far we have what Noach, so Noach, so the question is, did Noach fulfill what his parents wished him to do? So the Pesukim seems not from Midrash, of the fact that he made the plow, maybe he did solve the curse. Then when God said, "Hey, everyone's gonna die, you should build an ark." So the question is, so did he do the right thing by doing God said do it and he did it? And that's great. Or do we say, no, that's terrible because you should have, you know, asked to save people, which you did not do. So then what else would we have? What other things we have? So what else did Noah do? Let's go back to the second. That's all that's going to the top. Right. So what else did Noah do that we say he, so what was the next step in the story, right? So Noah gathered all the animals and they go on the teva. So does he do that properly?
Yes.
Yes, he does. He takes care of them. You know, there is a midrash about, you know, how he, you know, may have been late feeding the animals once. But, you know, overall it seems like, you know, over the course of, you know, a year on a boat with all the animals in the world, like being late with giving the lion his lunch once is, you know, part of the course, right? Great job. So what's the next thing that he does? What's the next event afterwards? Right?
Well, it brains and, okay.
So what'll be the next thing, right? So we have the well during the flood. What happens after the flood?
So he sends a dove out.
Right, the dove. So that seems like he's, you know, seeming that seems like a good thing. He's taking initiative, being sure it's safe, you know, don't want to risk everybody's lives. That sounds like a good thing. So score another one for Noah being a good guy. So what's the next step that makes him seem like an even better guy? Now once he's sure it's safe and God says you're clear for landing, so what does he do? Yeah, let's scroll down so we can see the second here. So what does he do?
He brings a korban.
Right? He brings a korban, which is a very impressive thing because, well, he was never told to do that. Just like he had the idea about setting out the dove, he also has the raven. He also hears the idea of we should offer korbano. God told him to bring way too many of certain animals. God had a plan that, you know what? I did it. And he offers a korban, and that's great. And also interesting to note is that at what point, what happens immediately following Noah's offering the korban? So we're in Pesach Chaf Aleph now. Yarach Hashem et Rech, and Yechovach Firmer Hashem Lipo, Lo'osif L'Kalel Odet Adama Bavor Adam, Ki Yetzer Lev Adam Ra Minu Rav, Lo'osif Od Lakot Et Kolchai Kasher Asiti. So what does God say? He smells the smell of the korbanot, and then he says, I will no longer curse the land that man is upon. I realize that man is he's always wicked, so he can't, it's not really his fault, so he'll make mistakes, and I shouldn't, you know, be so harsh. Then he follows it up with a covenant of the Brit Keshet of the rainbow with saying that God will never again destroy the world by bringing a flood. So seemingly Noah bringing the korban is the perfect thing, and now things are great. So that would be great if that's where the story ended. But that's not the end of the story. What happens afterwards? Right, so after we have the covenant, God promises that'll keep the world safe, and then he allows, now this is meant, since Noah did such a good job of taking care of the animals on the Teva, now he's able to actually eat meat, which he wasn't allowed to do before. So what happens now? Now that he has his covenant, what's the first thing Noah does after the covenant? We're in verse 18. And heading into 20, what does Noah do? This is the first thing Noah does when he gets off.
Plants a vineyard.
He plants a vineyard. So is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Depends on how you view alcohol.
Correct. Depends on how you do alcohol. We'll get back to that in just a minute. I've got a lot of stories about alcohol. If people scan them before, hopefully they notice that. So the question is, how do you view that the story of Noah's drinking? Right. And depending on how you view that, that might have a big effect. This is the last story we have. Because Noah, you know, he plants a vineyard, and then he drinks, and he becomes uncovered, and then his son discovers him, mocks his father, and the other sons cover him up. Right? Shem and Yafet cover him up. And then we see Noah waking up and cursing Ham, or Canaan, Ham's son. And then what happens after that? Right? So Canaan gets a curse. Yafet gets a blessing. Shem gets a blessing. And then what happens? Then dead. So the question of how we view Noah will depend on how we viewed all those activities until now. Right? Currently we have Noah's, you know, we have his, did he fulfill what his parents' mission for him was? At the end of the day, it seems like he fulfilled it. Even if he didn't stay the rest of you know, his generation, he still at least he stopped the curse on the land by the covenant he gets with Hashem. So the question is, should he have tried to save his generation? Did he do all that he could in terms of building the ark and afterwards? And what happened at the end with the drunk story? Those are the three questions we have to figure out. So now we're gonna scroll back up, and we're gonna scroll down, and we're gonna take a look at how Noach is perceived in Tanakh. So Noach is not quoted extensively in Tanakh. He's actually only quoted twice, not counting in Divrei Yamin. So Noach is only quoted twice, actually, in Tanakh, not counting in lists of names, which I would say don't really count because that's not, you know, glorifying or referencing him properly. It's just, so there's two references to Noach. So one is in Yeshayahu, one is in Yechezkel. So the question is, are these positive views of Noach, or are these negative views of Noach? So the first one we have is in so again, let's go through, so chronologically, Yeshayahu was first. So, right, so he says, right, so what he's prophesizing about what's going to happen to how he's not going to end up punishing Bnei Israel and fully destroy them. So he invokes the treaty he made with Noah. But just like I promise I never flood the world, therefore I'm never going to end up. God will never undo his covenant with Bnei Israel, which seemingly is a good. Pretty good.
4 hours. I'm
so on the other hand, we have another. So that one you could say is, you know, we are representing us still being a good thing. So the barometer to measure against. And then we get to Yechezkel, though. It's interesting here is that when is Noah mentioned? He's mentioned with two other people. He's mentioned with Noah. He's mentioned with, it goes Noah, Daniel, the Eov. Right, is the triplicate we have here of these three Anashim, of these three righteous individuals. So the question is, so what makes these people righteous and how does that relate to everything else? So one option is that you could say that, you know, these are all, just happen to be three very famous righteous people and that's it. But you can also say that these might be the three righteous Gentiles. So the debate is Noah's not Jewish because, you know, Avram wasn't born yet. And we know that Chazal say also wasn't Jewish. And so the question is, what to do about Daniel? Daniel seems to be a pretty Jewish name. So I'd like to point out that there's a ktiv there of Don El, right, which is not Daniel, right? It's a different name, Don El. So there's a possibility brought by a number of academics. That maybe that this Daniel isn't Daniel, is actually there's another figure known in the ancient world as Daniel, who was a righteous individual, not Daniel, who's everything else written about, but another nice guy who's, you know, therefore there's three, you know, notable Gentiles and Noah's one of them. So again, I place him on the good list. I wouldn't necessarily place him on the he's one of our forefathers list. Yeshayahu, maybe Yechezkel, seemingly not so much. So now, how does Tanakh view Noah? So the answer is, well, we've got a whole bunch of silence and then two references, which are not necessarily clearly indicating Noah being viewed in the most, well, he's viewed in a positive light, but not necessarily in a light as, like when we invoke, you know, Avraham and Yaakov throughout Tanakh, so that's not, we never see that happening with Noah. So now we're going to jump ahead in history. Now, a couple hundred years. Now we're in the time of the Apocrypha. The Apocrypha is the books that didn't get into Tanakh, were written at some point during Bayit Sheni. The question is, when precisely were they written, as well as where in the world were they written? Some were written in Israel, some were written in Chutz Laaretz. Why they were excluded is a story for another time. They're called Apocrypha, also known as the Hidden Works. So the first one I'd like to point to that explicitly mentions that Noah has a forefather is in Tobit. So Tobit is an interesting story of a man who ends up having a very hard life and ends up traveling around, and then, you know, had a lot of trouble befall him, and then, you know, slowly makes his way back And the end again, it's interesting story. If you want to read it, please go ahead. You can find it. Link on the page over there. If you want to read the whole story, the one I gave you both has the Greek as well as the Hebrew. It was most likely originally written in Hebrew. We only have their surviving Greek translation, the Septuagint, because we have some fragments that have been found at the Dead Sea Scrolls, but we don't actually have a full copy. But thankfully, the Christian Church decided it was worthy of saving, so therefore we have it. Whether or not she was apocryphal or not is a story about Sarma and Chitzona, about books that have been deliberately excluded. So we'll leave that aside for a separate story, a different year. So, but what does they say there? So he says when he's praying to when Tobit is praying to God. So, and he is giving him a advice for some sense on his journey, which will hopefully eventually come full circle and save the father as well in the story. So he says, we are children of the prophets Noah, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So the reason why it's spelled with an E is because it's based off of the Greek one when they didn't have a chet. So anyways, so right, so here clearly you see that there's four forefathers, Noah, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We have four forefathers now, so at least according to Tobit. So they clearly read positively all the questions they had about Noah. They're like, nope, he's got a covenant with God, he saved the world, he's our forefather. Very straight. Similarly, Ben Sira, again, another work of Apocrypha, it's a wisdom work, again, written by somebody named Ben Sira, where he gives a list of forefathers, of people who are our forefathers. So here, actually, the list is a little bit longer. It actually has five. We also have Chanoch. This is originally written in, was probably originally written in Hebrew. We don't have the original Hebrew, so hence I decided to bring you guys to get rid of the English, because, well, may as well save us all some effort. For not reading the original, may as well read one we understand better. So here we see, right, that there's the famous men, our fathers that begat us, right? So this is seemingly a list of our forefathers. Note who we have listed. We've got Enoch, which is Thanos. Again, apologies for the Greeks not knowing how to pronounce their chets. Their heads. Okay, right? So that's where this is. Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Right, so those are the five. Then there's the 12 tribes, which aren't mentioned by name. So that's who we have. So according to them, so actually we have five of them, not four. Because Chanoch is also elevated. Whether or not you'd say, so just an interesting note in terms of Second Temple literature, so there's a lot of things called Enochic literature, basically, because all we know about Noach is that, or about Chanoch is Mitalechet Elohim, and then Enenu Kilchavet Elohim, so we know that Noach walked with God and then disappeared. So in Baishevet, there's a whole bunch of works written and attributed to Chanoch, basically where people, they're called pseudepigrapha because they're most definitely not written by Chanoch. People want to claim that it was. And they would basically put whatever words within they want to say, they would say Chanoch said it. So that was a big thing in the Bayit Sheni. There's a whole bunch of books about that. If you're curious about reading about that, search, Akkadic literature. You can Google it if you want more sources on that again another time. Right? So in addition, we also have Noah is also included. So that would imply that that's pretty good then. So at least according to Tobit and Ben Sira. Ben Sira is actually the closest one to being of those that weren't part of Tanakh that almost made it. There's actually a couple times in Gemara where it says Shana Amar and then it quotes Ben Sira. So it was really close. But it didn't make it in the end. So that's what the Apocrypha say. So now we're going to move forward a little bit in years again. So Tobit was some point potentially between the first by Rishon and by Shani. Zero is written most definitely in the was written sometime after the sort of the Maccabees. So again, probably about like 150-100 BCE. But now we're going to that of Philo of Alexandria, who was at the turn of the millennia. He is called Father of Alexandria because, well, he lived in Alexandria, in Egypt. So, interesting note about him is that he was a leader of many, he was a leader amongst Jews in Alexandria, Egypt. He was a Hellenistic Jewish philosopher in an attempt to get people to be more observant of the Torah, he gave Tameh HaMitzvot. Unfortunately, the result was that people instead took his Tom of his mitzvah and then decided to throw away the mitzvah. And the people who really liked what Philo had to say were the Christians, who used his writings as a basis for why they could avoid doing almost all of the mitzvot and just follow the spirit of the law instead and not follow any of the laws. In fact, Philo actually, at some point in his writing, he laments, wrote this so that you guys would follow Torah mitzvot. I don't know what you're doing. Like, I told you I'm doing this. Why are you ignoring me? I don't get it. So. Okay, so how about Philo? So how does he relate to Noah? So to that effect, so we have, again, this is on Abraham. Again, this was definitely written in Greek because he couldn't really read Hebrew very well. He says, I apologize for my inaccuracies in my commentary, but I mostly learned off of the Greek translation because I do not speak Hebrew very well. Now, when he's talking about Noah and saying how and ranking him and how good he is, so he mentions that he is praised as being possessed of such great virtues for his generation. So what is he saying? That he's, what it says, you should say Tamim HaHabedar Tav, right, perfect in his generation. So what does this do? This is showing that he was not perfect absolutely, that he wasn't good in comparison with the others who lived at that time. Right, so this may sound familiar from Rashi, and about the debate, is he good only in a generation, and he'd be no way of the time of Avraham. And here it seems like that Philo of Alexandria is just saying a similar thing, that he's comparatively good, but that doesn't mean that, but then again, he's not the absolute best, but he's still really, he's good, definitely very good compared to the people he was with who are wicked, so still not so bad. So, right, so then, so, and as far as the story about his drunkenness later on, so I'm just good, I didn't bring it here because it was very long, a little rambly. So basically, but he comments on the fact that when he was drinking, that Noah drank in the way that a wise man drinks. So, which would imply that he didn't necessarily get drunk. He may have gotten drunk, but he didn't, he wasn't, pass out drunk and like it was all his fault. Rather, whatever, anything that happened afterwards, it was Tom's fault for peeking at his dad. He went to sleep back in his bed, and you shouldn't have done that. So we have the court of Philo, so that ranks, so we have Noah being ranked pretty high, but not quite of a level, but ranked pretty good. And then we have, somebody just dropped out, that happened. Okay. So, and then we have Pseudo-Philo, which is an anonymous work. People thought it was Philo until they realized that it wasn't Philo. So that's Pseudo-Philo. We don't have a full copy of everything that he wrote, but what we have, what's relevant, so it says he adds the word of Matzachem, he also adds the word Rachamim, right, the word mercy. Noah found grace and mercy before the Lord, and these are generations. Noah was a righteous man, undefiled his generation, pleased the Lord. The question of the adding of the words, just finding Matzachem, it also says Rachamim, right? So that could also imply that maybe Noah wasn't quite so worthy of being on his own merits, but maybe that because of his, he needed God to be merciful in order to save him. Okay, so now when we're looking at, how would you try and fix up the story to make it look like Noah is a saint? For that, we have Jubilees. Jubilees was written during Bayit Sheni. It was a really calendaric work if anybody here has read through Seder Olam, notice that it's that its structure is similar because probably the Seder Olam is literally trying to show that Julius is wrong. But again, that's a separate story. So in Jubilees, again, this was written by people, but it was not written by Chazal. It was written by the Stukim, or by people who had similar views to the Stukim. So they fixed a lot of things in order to fit with their halacha, which we may not agree with. But they'll have lots of interesting things that we'll see. We'll read through it. I'll read the highlights because we only have 12 minutes left, and I want to make sure we still haven't even gotten to Chazal yet, so we're gonna try, hopefully we'll get to everything. I apologize. The sources will be there if you look them in more in depth than the summary that I will give you outside. Okay, so we see that you'll notice there's a lot of the word Jubilees got all over the place because that's how they used to keep track of time. That's why it's called Jubilees, because Jubilees is 50 years. So 50 and 50 is 200, which you get to the normal way we count, but they count it in terms of 50. So Jubilees. So now we're picking up at the end of the flood. So God says there'll be no more flood. I'll read. So for this reason, it is ordained and written on the heavenly tablets. They should celebrate the Feast of the Weeks in this month once a year to renew the covenant every year. And this whole festival is celebrated in heaven from the day of creation to the day of Noah, 26 Jubilees, 5 weeks of years. So, which means that, what is the Feast of Weeks? Oh, that's Shavuot. So this means that apparently the Noah's offering of the Korban took place on Shavuot, which means that there's some direct connection between what Noah did with the fact that Matan Torah is when it is. And it was celebrated by not only the Avot observed the mitzvot, so apparently the Avot also includes Noah and his sons. Right, because Noach and his sons observed different 7 Jubilees in one week of years until Noach passed away. And then his sons did away with it. So maybe we don't really like Noach's sons, so they didn't really follow the mitzvot. They wanted to get out of respect for their father, so we can throw away Noach's sons, but at least Noach seemingly is one of the Avot. Then we see that and Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and his children observed it until they forgot it when they were in Egypt, and then they did it again. So it should be noted that there's a lot of things that there is a tradition even in Jubilees as well, of the fact that it is a mitzvot, but the difference is that opposed to being based on an event that's going to happen in the future, it's based on an event in the past, and of the first time of God's covenant with Noah. So there's a very big change. Also, let's look at chapter 7. So when Noah is planting the vines, so he waits a couple of years, right? So he's practicing the laws of Orla. He's waiting 3 years before he can eat the fruits of the fourth year. Not only that, when he's drinking his wine, he's not drinking like it looks like in the Pesukim where he drank himself into oblivion and disappeared. Rather, he made a fast. He celebrated with a feast and he invited everybody and he made a korban. He always did two. And then, you know, he did all the things properly, like as taught in Vayikra about how to offer the korbanot, where you would do the fats and the blood and everything. He just does everything correctly. Then he goes to sleep, and then after this whole feast is when he goes to sleep in his bed. So his drunkenness is a very positive thing, right? Because he had a feast, and you go to sleep after a feast, and that's fine. So, and then we see at the end when we go to the case of, you know, even though his son had uncovered him, but he's uncovered in his tent. We don't have to like have Sam walking in on him and that whole weird story. That's not there. He slept without a blanket that night. Not a big deal. And then also we see that. As opposed to the last thing he says is cursing his sons, chapter 10, we see in Jubilees, we see that there are demons starting to cause them to stray, and then said Noach intervenes and puts them back on the right path, gets them to do tshuva, and gives them, and also gives them a book of remedies, and then he passes, and gives them words of advice, so to not fall prey again, and then he moves on. So this is a very big change in terms of what's going on. Noach went from being a simple individual, from possibly ending his life as a drunkard, to ending his life making his sons return and do tshuva. Very big difference in terms of how you end the story. So in so much of the Jubilees, we have the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? The Dead Sea Scrolls were written over the course of around two centuries, from 130 BCE until around the time of the destruction of the temple. So as far as when these particular ones were written, it's based on carbon dating, so certain ones are older than others. But as far as how old them are, I'll leave that aside for now. I'll summarize. So I'll point out here that that there is one place where when they have prayers for Yom Tovim, and there it seems to have for Rosh Hashanah, it looks like Kirshanu, right? Like from the, which kind of sounds a lot like the part of Vidui. And it says Vatakem Lenoach Brit Litzak Yaakov Amunatacha, which seems to be that in the prayers they invoked Noach, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And this is the Dead Sea Scrolls done by either which is not Chazal, they're either the Etrusim, the Tzdukim, or the Essenes. Who exactly they are, again, long debate. Not enough time for that for now. If you want, I can talk about another time. So, again, then there's another fact we find here where it says, Takem le Noach et Habrit. Over here, right? So again, the text is fragmentary, but if you think that above before is Vatakam Noach Brit, then that would mean that here too is Vatakam Noach Brit. That means that they're invoking in the course of their prayers, they're invoking the covenant that Hashem had with Noach, which we do as well on Rosh Hashanah. And Zichrono, the Pesukim that we read are actually from Noach, from governing Noach. And also, as far as the question of how do you deal with the there's also the Genesis Apocryphon, which is a running commentary on a pseudo midrash. It looks similar to Jubilees in many ways. More on that again, separate year. On time, I apologize. Again, if you want to look more, Google Genesis Apocryphon. It's fascinating. I gave a link. I think I gave a link to it here as well. So we change around some of the things we don't. So instead of Vayitgal b'tocholo, they changed it to being Itgal, meaning that God had said that Noah has a vision. Instead of the drinking incident, they replace that entirely and simply have the whole thing being there's no mention of being drunk, just he has a nevuah, and that's it. And so he never curses his son, nothing. So Noah ends off on a clean slate. He's perfect. We invoke him. He does nothing wrong. First God to do karbonah. First one, the covenant with God. Noah's the man. Well, that's the Genesis Apocryphon. We're not Chazal. So as we start getting a little closer to Chazal, we see it. So this is a time frame. So there's Josephus, who thinks that he was who claims to be a Prushi. So we're talking about when he tends to view Noach a little more moderately. He doesn't have the drinking into oblivion, but he has the added part of the drinking with the korban, which is still a little bit better. Now let's get to So again, he still has some of the tribulations of the Tzdukim in there, but so where does he fall? We'll leave that again for another time. So now let's get to Chazal. So the famous Rashi is saying, we say b'dorotav, so is that good or terrible? So is he, would he have been great at the time of Avram or not? So that comes down to what we said before, to how do you view all of Noah's things? Should he have protested like Avram did and he failed, and therefore he's a failure? Or that's unreasonable to expect out of Noah, and therefore Noah did a great job? Or, and also the question of Noah getting drunk at the end, is that his fault to get in up or not? Also a very important question is, after Noah got drunk, what did he do? Noah, you know, got drunk, cursed his son, and then he ended his life. And then like he lived his life, you know, like wallowing in a drunken stupor for the next 300 years. Or did he, pick himself back up and just like he had fallen before, and now he's back up on his feet again? So that's a good question, of which I don't have which I can't answer, because that part is actually not, there's no mention of that in the text. I will point out that there are many midrashim that point each way. If you want to read more, again, I left the whole pages for midrashim for everybody. So I just want to point out, in terms of the fact that if Noach was a nobody time of Avram or not, so if you'll notice here in terms of the years, Noach died in 2006. Avram was born in 1948, so they overlap for 58 years. So was Noach alive and a nobody in the time of Avram? Quite possibly. Depends on when you think Avram noticed, discovered God and was chosen. And lastly, a question of you'll note that Noach is both comes from the, he happens to come from the line of Shet, who are noted to be Isha Elohim, and Noah is also Tlechat Elohim, yet he's also commanded to do construction, which is the trait of Cain, right? Working the land. Cain would work the land, he built cities, and his great great grandkids built the tide of civilization, metallurgy, husbandry, farming, and music. And Noah's task is to do both. So I'd like to suggest that, and this is a sort of a combination of a lot of the theories you mentioned until now, that Noah was trying to do two jobs. Right? He was trying to be the man of God, as well as being a man of the land. The problem is that the question is, did he succeed or not succeed? And the way you read that is based on how you read the end of Noah's life. Noah succeeded in incorporating him being godly, as well as him being a man of the earth. And you'd say that Noah planted the vineyard as a way of trying to save the land and save mankind. And, you know, he made a mistake and got drunk in the middle, but, you know, that's okay. Or you could even wipe out the drunken part of the story to say he just drank like a wise man did and goes in the tent and, you know, didn't put on his blanket at night, not his fault. But on the other hand, you could say, no, Noah had been a man of God. He had taken it and he had dedicated his working of the land, his construction towards God, but after the flood, he was a broken man. He couldn't do it anymore. That's why he planted his vineyard, to drink himself to oblivion, to give up on life. So which one was Noah? I don't know. But everybody should hopefully keep that in mind, you know, while going through this week's Parsha, to see, do you think that Noah was he picked himself back up and became the upstanding individual he was before, did he continue to improve, or did he come to the temptations of wine and descend into drunken madness? Okay. So, anybody has any questions or comments, please feel free to ask them now. I will unmute everybody who I previously muted. So you're welcome. Everybody's welcome to comment.
Thank you.
My pleasure. So has anybody changed their minds on Noah since this year? Anybody view
important? Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Okay. So if anybody has any other thoughts.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening in.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's just a quick thought. In my opinion, he just kind of follows suit of all, like a lot of the like Abbot in Bereshit, just like it's not a perfect story. Nobody's perfect.
But it's perfect. But the question is how would you read it? You can read it as being better or worse. The question is, how do you want, like,
in comparison to the Avot?
For Noah, to live Avot, then there are places where we don't explicitly did the right thing or the wrong thing, or there's just like empty years. The question is, how do you want to view those years in between? Do you want to view it as they keep building upwards as they have been until now, which would then rise into higher heights? Or will you view it as, well, being an empty time means that something went wrong?
I also think, I don't know like if this is the right sort of point, but there's also deciding on judgments of the avot who are, yes, supposed to be, I guess, perfect or whatever they're considered in this way, but seeing them as flawed as well, and having, if you say that, like, yes, they were holier and I guess closer to perfect, but also could have made mistakes, then is Noah really any worse than that?
Well, we have one clear example where he is worse, at least according to Avraham, in terms of the, he does not even attempt to save anybody else according to the Pesukim. That is one thing we can have against why Noah would not make the cut.
Right.
He could still be a great guy, but Avot might need to try and save the world as opposed to simply saving their family. I believe that Shira wrote, and in our tradition, he is not one of the Avot. Correct. We do not. We have three Avot, not four.
Yes. I know.
So, well, I
mean, don't the Avot serve a different purpose? Wasn't it more like, I think Noah was just more like, it was more just about not having like a human race that was like greedy versus like, you know, religion necessarily. You know, like the whole idea of the Avot was like them kind of starting off like this like foundational part of like Judaism, like big, you know, like kind of this monotheism that eventually transitions into creating like this entire different like chosen nation. Whereas like Noah was about creating an entire world that like, you know, God felt like wasn't bad, at least. Which is like, you know, having a chosen nation.
Right. So part of if you're interested in the development in the chosen theory, so Rav Nachman Liptak has an excellent thesis on this, where he goes through the how God's interaction went from being on humanity as a whole and slowly narrowed. Which again, I'd point you towards. So then, like, so he's very much a fan of saying that. After the failure of with Adam and Chava, followed by the failure of Noah, so and then that's when God decided that relating to all people, all of the mankind at once, is an exercise of futility. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it went to being the family based, much smaller model.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, yeah, I think like also Noah had like more trauma to deal with.
Right, so it's also the whole world dying on you is a hard thing to live through. So you've got to give them some points for, you know, not collapsing.
Yeah.
Or at least stuff, sticking it out at least until, you know, you got a guarantee from God the world wouldn't collapse before giving up. Either way, very impressive.
Yeah. I just feel like the entire expectation like of what Noah is supposed to do, was supposed to do, what he witnessed is just very different than the Avot. It isn't necessarily worse or better, just like functionally different.
Correct. Just interesting to note that there are, as we saw from Jubilees and many of the other people from the second, from the BIJ, that they tried to bring, to amend the story, make it look a lot more like the story of Avraham, Isaac, and Yaakov. Meaning to, all the things that we read as being problematic and showing, you know, his struggles, they whitewashed. Or they edited in a more positive light, or they added a story to fix it afterwards, just so you just remove the ambiguity.
Well, I mean, that might be part of, like, I mean, not to, like, dive into this too much, but that might be part of why that was not so much included in the narrative, is that, like, that wasn't the point, you know? It's a very, like, different approach. Like, a lot of people view that, like, whatever you read in Tanakh, like, whatever historical figures are viewed in Tanakh as like being favored by God, you have to have this kind of like perfect image of them for the most part. But like, I feel like that's very much like part of the rabbis to some extent, to like, and it's just like when you make something canon and not canon, like trying to kind of have a narrative that you're trying to like put across. And like, that's the point, is that like it wasn't the same.
Right. So the question is, which is, how is it not the same, and where, and how are you gonna, and we had a wide range. The question is, where do you want to plot Noah? So again, Just for your own knowledge, like how do you want to view him at the end of the day? And then where is he? And then like, what did he succeed in? Where did he fail in? Again, and how do you view him overall? Then I don't, again, there's no right or wrong answer. Just, the question is, which one do you feel is the most true?
I don't know if I like put him in like the same even like context necessarily.
So that's fine. So then he can still be a righteous man. He can still be a very righteous man and just not be one of the other, which is perfectly fine. Just COVID and Jubilee strongly disagree with you.
You know, from that point of view, no, it's a success story. I didn't realize I was unmuted. I said that the first person that we meet in Breishit is Adam HaRishon, and he didn't have so many things that he had to follow. He really had very few things that he had to follow, and he clearly was not a success story. And the next person we're introduced to really is Noah. So Noah has more things because he's in a, you know, there are more people around, there's a totally different climate, and he's very successful at the beginning. I know it says B'dor Tav, but he's very successful at the beginning. So when we come to the end of the story, and he errs, let's say, at the end of the story, he didn't err this as extremely as Adam HaRishon erred, or as, you know, Cain erred. And it was a different kind. It was a different kind of problem than the Avot had, but they all had their own problems. None of them were perfect. They all were all looking, you know, so that we don't think about him because he doesn't, you know, have that whole declaration for God, from God, you know, to God, like Abraham does. So he's a different kind of person, but I do see him not maybe not as a tzaddik, but I do see him as somebody.
Tzaddik just means he did 50.001% good, which I think we could probably say Noach did.
About even more than that, compare. And first of all, it's a little bit like the tzaddikim are a little bit like, as at least as presented, is a little bit like color. Color is only relative to other colors. So he's a tzaddik relative to his generation. Right, and we don't hear about when Abraham starts out. We don't hear about the other people that he's, you know, relative to that generation. We don't know what was really going on over there. You know, they don't live at the same time, so you can't compare people.
So my question,
I understand that's what it says.
Right. So my question then is, what about the first 58 years? So the answer to the 58 years question could be the 58 years that they were alive at the same time. Is that those 58 years? Well, who's to say that Avraham had even discovered God yet, right? Because first command to Avraham is given when he's 75. So he could have only found out about God, and he had, you know, there's still a 17-year gap there, so he could have discovered God at age 60, and then that'll solve the issue. Right. Also, it might not have been in the same region. It could have been in different parts of the world, for all we know. We just don't know. We don't have any midrash. There's no midrash, as far as I know. Saying that Noach met Avraham and the stories they had together.
Right.
So if somebody wants to write one, just let me know if you've heard somebody write that midrash or, you know, heard of it, because I'd be interested to hear it. But yeah. She was at Melvin C. Avraham's Facebook post about God.
Shira Avraham. Right. Okay.
So,
right, he's not, yeah, right. He's not one of the Avot.
Okay.
So right,
thank you,
Chaim.
Thank you,
Scott.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Bear in mind.
Rabbi
Chaim.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.